Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Thank you, everybody, for joining tonight, Coach Menachem Berfel, on this beautiful Sunday night, May 11th, 2025. Thank you for joining us. We have Stephen Terrell here with us tonight, big, big player. We have a lot to talk about, so thanks for joining our program. Let's get into it. We have a lot to cover. We have a lot to cover in little time. Let's make it happen. Tonight's program, tonight's share is 230. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank all the people that posted it, let people know about it. As we say, it's a Sichas Haverim, a place for people to talk, to get things out, and to really have healing and a place to talk about the issues so we could all grow together. If anyone wants to join our WhatsApp chat, to go WhatsApp us at 732-314-1710 and join our community chats where you see all the speakers and the replays. Please join it. You can go to MenachemBernfeld.com to his website and sign up for the emails where he sends the speakers, the replays. So please join us. For all the people that are watching the replay on YouTube, click on the like button. So every week when we post a shiurim, you get to see them. And click on the replay button and the subscribe button and the like button. Thank you to all the advertising sponsors, the Lakewood Scoop here on Lakewood, Ellie and Aaron from Central, Chayla Kal from JCN and from promoting us on all the Jewish digital platforms. Remember, every Sunday night, we're in our sixth year, Stephen, sixth year. This is program 230. 230 programs of 2 to 3 hours. So it's a lot of content over here. It's about, you know, probably like a whole library of books. Every Sunday night at 9 p.m., we have different programs, different shiurim, different rabbis, different speakers, different world-renowned people. Next week, May 18th, we have Dr. Jacob Friedman, who's been on many times from Israel. It's going to be an amazing program. We didn't exactly find up to the topic yet, but he really wants to come on. He has something on his mind. So please join us next week as well. And we're going to turn it first to Menachem. Tonight's share is 230. Coach Menachem, what are we doing here on this Sunday night with Stephen Terrell?
Okay, welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem. And we're excited. It's a very interesting topic. Like we heard, Usher mentioned, there's a lot of content. And now the question is, what do we do with the content? So, you know, we have many people that reached out, they're trained in this modality, and they say it actually did something phenomenal, and we're going to hear more about it. But I'm sitting here every Sunday night with different topics, different discussions, whether it's on the education, relationships, struggling teens, anxiety. And I must say that the feedback is really amazing. People are learning. People are growing themselves with their spouse. They see the difference with their kids, with the relationship, coworkers, whatever, you know, everybody in there, wherever they need it, actually try to apply what they're learning. And it's amazing. And that's the reason why we're still here. We're continuing. And this is what many people need. And Baruch Hashem, it's amazing. And on the other hand, we do get sometimes, and there are those people who, no matter what we discuss and how many times they could hear it, and many times it could be in one area in your life, that for some reason, in that place, you just can't. You've tried. You tried many things, you discuss it, you're smart, you know how to, but when it comes to the actual situation, you're just lost. And some people feel guilty, and it takes them down that rabbit hole, why doesn't it work? And they try to take maybe more classes, read more books, more workshops, and they're here tonight.
Kol HaLashon.
Maybe. Not giving up, and that's amazing, but they always have the question of, why can't I just take a deep breath and let go? Why can't I just relax? Why can't I just accept my situation? Why can't I just believe? You know, all of these ideas. And that's where we're saying tonight, that enough is enough. Enough with words. Enough said. And tonight, hopefully, we're not going to talk. We're going to do something else, and, you know, obviously we'll have to discuss it. And it's interesting because as a child, we started off without words, started off making, imagine a 4-month-old. in the moment, laughing and crying, making noises. That's where they are. And eventually we grow up and you put words to that, to those feelings, words to situations, and we start talking. But tonight we're going to try to go back to maybe not talk and maybe let go. And hopefully we'll be able to learn of a new concept, a new language, at least get the idea so that if it's something that we need, somebody needs it, they'll be able to reach out. And my hope is that whoever needs it should be able to get that help. And let's go. Let's start, Usher. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach Menachem, for the beautiful opening. We start here tonight. Well, our sponsor tonight is Fresh Start, a Jewish retreat. If anybody feels they need a little healing, they need a week, go there. And it's a tremendous place. We'll send out information about it later. It's an amazing program. I'm very involved with it. If anybody has any questions, reach out to me. Let's get into this. Okay, Stephen Terrell. Okay, we title it, When Talk Isn't Enough, Healing Trauma Through the Body. Stephen Terrell is a leading expert in the field of developmental trauma and adoption and is recognized around the world for his work in developmental trauma and healing. He understands developmental trauma from the inside out. Terrell has performed more than 35,000 individual transformation touch sessions and taught thousands of students from around the world his regulation-focused modality, transforming touch. Stephen, thank you very much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it. Open it up. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you both. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here and to be able to speak to so many people and to talk a bit about transforming touch. And, you know, Menachem, you were saying let go, let go. I heard that those two words and I was like, oh yeah. Why is it that we get blocked in that place of letting go? What is it that we're holding on to? And how do we even get to that place? And coming from that place of letting go is actually a left brain activity. It takes thought, it takes logic, it takes the ability to look at something and decide it's no longer what I need in my life. And so I'm going to discern, not judge, but discern that it isn't good for me, and I'm going to be able to work towards that process of letting go. For some, that might be a 12-step program. For some, that could be going to therapy. For some, that could be a walk in the woods. What I found out the hard way was with my own trauma, my own developmental trauma, kept getting this kind of run around, and then finally got to a place where it began to make sense. And transforming touch is from my own two sons. Both of them had multiple areas of dysregulation. And dysregulation is a pretty mundane thought. When we think about dysregulation, if we think about a river flowing that has big boulders in it, so there's lots of rapids, and the water is rough and it's running through it, that's dysregulation. Regulation is when we look at the river and the river is calm and we can see that black, dark streak that's kind of running down the middle of the river near the river bottom. That's God, right in the middle of the regulation. We're able to see God, be with God. God is right there and we can find our way, so to speak. But when we are conceived, the moment of conception, we pick up all the trauma from all of our ancestors. Everything that wasn't resolved comes down and comes into us. And it begins to affect how every cell is formed in our body before we're ever born, before we ever get this experience of life. And so many times we're born in the rapids. We're born in the rough waters. We either have unavailable caretakers because they might be busy or depressed, or they're trying to get through the day, or there's a thousand reasons, or maybe we ended up in a NICU Maybe we ended up in special care right after birth. Maybe we were born soon. Maybe we had a hard birth. Looking at these things, there are no words. There's no words. We can't put words together. We can create story, and we can have these really elaborate stories of how we got to be who we are today by things we've heard about our ancestors or things we've heard about our own childhood. And we can create all these stories. But the people telling us the stories aren't always telling us the truth either, because their idea is that we were born and it was a good thing and now you're born and everything's wonderful and la, 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 when in fact it may not have been. Things may have been much more harder and nobody's owning that. And so here we are, we're moving along in life and we're still, we always have to look at what's the cost of doing business. And that means how much effort are we expanding or expounding on every day to feel safety? How much are we spending to find that calm river with God in the middle? How much is it costing us? Am I doing drugs? Am I angry? Am I yelling? Am I isolating? Am I going out at night? Am I smoking too much? Am I doing drugs? Am I, you know, what am I doing to keep myself safe? And realizing that we're all doing the best we can. And so we begin to come in, and with Transforming Touch, we're looking at this body. And we know from research that 80% of how we live our life comes up from our body to our brain, unless you have developmental trauma. You have developmental trauma, you flip and you become logical and you become all of these head games are going on in our brains and we're 80% being guided by our head and 20% about our body. So we're completely flipped over. And it's about finding the safety, finding the survival, finding a way that today will be a little bit easier than yesterday. And we have to, we have families, we have, you know, jobs, we have all of these places and things that we're kind of having to do, along with having to stay safe, having to grow. We know that when we're not safe, we don't learn. We know that it takes extra effort to be in relationship, because if we're not safe, we struggle in those relationships. We struggle with intimacy. We struggle with the ability to share God with each other. We're struggling. We're struggling. We're trying to get through this. So with Transforming Touch, we come in and we go, okay, let's begin with the simplest of simple. And the simplest of simple is, let's begin to establish somatic trust. How are we going to establish somatic trust? By asking permission, by regulating where we're touching, touching in very safe places. People are completely dressed. There's nobody, you know, nobody like a massage. It's none of that. There's no manipulation in that way. We're coming in and we're doing a kidney adrenals, which are, we have two of them. We know that when we're frightened or we're threatened, whether it's real or perceived, we have a lot of chemicals that come out of our brain and go immediately to our adrenals. So we're beginning to comfort them. For some of us, it's the first time in our lives we've ever comforted them. We come and we touch the brainstem where our autonomic nervous system lives. We're the controller of the river. Where our sympathetic response, which gives us that rush we need to fight or run or freeze, where our parasympathetic lives, it comes in and is able to say, let's calm down. Everything's okay. The world is safe. We're quiet now. All of those parts are sitting there. We come into the ankles where we allow energy to move through our body. We allow things to occur. And then we cross our corpus callosum. We come in and we start regulating the brain a bit with some movement of our feet. So it's very regulated and it's very predetermined, like 5 minutes in each spot or 3 minutes or 4 minutes. And we're going to move through these places and we begin that process of establishing some level of somatic trust. And at the same time, we're showing up because I'm also there for attachment. So I'm there to realize during a session, I'm the only adult in the room. This person has probably regressed all the way back to the earliest of earliest times. So I have the opportunity to apologize, to repair the ruptures as they come up. I'm able to say, oh, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry you went through that. I wish it would have been different. And to move through that conversation and begin to move someone from insecure attachment into a place of secure attachment where I can be the secure base, as John Bowlby years ago talking about attachment, that person who I can hold it for you. I can be with you without chasing you, without trying to change you, without trying to manipulate you. I can just sit with you. I don't have to judge what you're doing. I can just apologize. I can hear your story. I can be that one who is in that place. And through doing that, we also found out that many of us, our very earliest primitive reflexes, which are all based in survival, from the time we start labor, when we're in the womb, that earliest fear paralysis coming on board, that we're able in relationship to come back in and do some things to begin to repair these. So it's transforming touch is about somatic trust. It's about primitive reflex repair, and it's about attachment, and it's about caring about someone enough to say, I'm sorry, and also about being the responsible one in the room. I'm not expecting you to do anything. And what happens is that all of those things, those defensive accommodations we've been using our lifetime in order to stay safe, they begin to fade. They begin to fade. We don't focus on anything. We're just focusing, if we're focusing on something, it's about regulation, about expanding that window of tolerance to where we have even a split second is all it takes, just a split second for me to choose something different, for me to be able to go, oh, I could do this, but if I do this, the outcome's going to be better. And be able to choose that better outcome, to be able to look over here and go, okay, I can be this person and I can be safe. And, you know, that letting go comes in because until we have a little expansion in our window of tolerance, that idea of letting go, we can't. We're holding on to everything. And sometimes, it took me a long time to figure this out, the greatest part of healing is living with who you are. Not losing any of the parts. Not anything miraculous. Except today I can live with who I am. Today I can show up and say, oh, you know, maybe I'm sensitive to smells, but oh, I can regulate myself. I can hold my breath and get through it. Or I can put a bag over my head and get through it. I can figure out how I'm going to get through something that before might have made me very triggered. You know, I love the word triggered because triggers are safety based. When we get triggered, it's because our system is going towards overwhelm and we cannot handle what's coming. And so being able to step back and go, okay, with some regulation on board, what would it be like to swim in the river without the rapids? What would it be like just to lay there and let the water roll over us without it being rough and tormenting? And that's what transforming touch does. It begins to expand our window of tolerance to where we're able to see things in a different light, to be able to have a greater relationship with God, which is one of the greatest. If there's a miracle in the process, it's that, because we're no longer so angry. We're now able to go, oh, okay, God fits in here too. And all of this work is about safety. Less effort to live, less effort, and safety. Living in a safer place, moving out of the fear, moving out of justification, moving out of, oh, if you knew who I really was, you either wouldn't like me or you would understand better. I'm never quite sure which of those becomes true, but I hear both all the time. And for me, every time I do a session, I'm sitting with God waiting for you. I'm not over here doing something different. I am right here quietly waiting. I'm not chasing you. I'm not trying to get you to do something. I'm waiting for you. And I think that's birth. We wait for birth. We wait for the baby to come. And as the baby comes, then we're much more willing to accept and love the baby. We're much more open to it when we're able to wait without rushing, without the hurry. So every time I do a session, I'm getting a session too. So, you know, every time my life gets a little bit better, a little bit easier, you know, because I'm getting a session. I get 6 to 8 sessions every day of my life, along with teaching and all of that. It just, I'm just grateful to God every moment of my life anymore. I can say, this is good. This is good. My life's getting easier. And that's just kind of a little bit of a rundown about what Transforming Touch is.
Okay. Amazing, Stephen. Thank you for the opening. A lot of questions. We're going to get very deep tonight. Really understand it on a much higher level. Let's start first with the polls. We're going to feel the crowd out, and then we're really going to get into it, okay? Here we go. First question. When you're emotionally triggered, what's your go-to reaction? What's your personal go-to reaction? Number one, I shut down and go numb. Number two, I get anxious or restless. Number three, I become reactive or angry. Number four, I try to avoid or distract myself. So when that thing happens that makes you like, whatever you want to call it, triggered, how do you react? Second question, where do you feel triggers most in your body? A, tightness in my chest. B, a knot in my stomach. C, tension in my jaw or shoulders. Or D, I don't usually notice. I disconnect from my body. Three, what helps you the most when you are triggered? A, what helps you the most when you're triggered? Like, how do you, like, get out of that? A, walking it out. B, breathing or grounding. C, being alone. Or four, honestly, I don't know what helps. Okay, give me a few seconds. Everybody answered. And then after everybody answers, we're going to share the results. Steve, you can't start voting yet. We're going to share with everybody.
Excellent.
Good questions?
They're very interesting. Yeah. I'm like going, I love it that there's no right answer.
Exactly. We just want to see that the people understand what we're talking about, the feelings, getting their mind in the right zone.
Yeah.
To be like, what is he talking about? I came here because I thought he was talking about cooking recipe.
I was. I was going to give a Kugel recipe.
Talk about the emotion recipe.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's share. Most people voted. Let's share the results. Here we go. You ready? Look at this. Number one, when your emotions trigger, what's your go-to reaction? 24%, I shut down and go numb. 23%, I get anxious or restless. 30%, I become reactive or angry. 23%, I try to avoid or distract myself. So basically, straight up, everybody has their own reaction when they get triggered. Second question, where do you feel triggers most in your body? 28% feel tightness in the chest. Most people, 36% of people, not in their stomach. 19% of people feel it in their jaw or their shoulders. 18% of people, they don't usually notice it. They just disconnect completely from their body. What helps you the most when you are triggered? The number one answer people are saying is talking it out. Number two, 29% breathing or grounding.
B.
third answer is being alone. Fourth answer is, honestly, I don't know what helps. 22%. Steve, any answer, any comment on any of these questions or anything you want to say before we get into the questions?
Well, you know, what I'll say is that I love that number one, it says, you know, when you're emotionally triggered, what's your go-to reaction? I would imagine we could put another 30 different answers in there and it would stay balanced. And it imagines, you know, with the plus or minus in there, they're all pretty much exactly equal.
Yeah.
And what's important is what happens after you're triggered. What happens after you shut down? What happens after you get anxious? What happens after you get angry? What happens with that anger and how is it coming through? What's happening there? And then where do you feel triggered most? I think that's another balanced place. I'm not in my stomach. I think that that's the go-to place. And I think that's because when we're activated and our adrenals dump this stuff called cortisol and epinephrine in our bloodstream, it immediately goes to our stomach and tells our stomach to evacuate, to lose everything, to go to the bathroom, to poop out everything in us so that we can run to freedom. So it makes total sense that the stomach's coming on in the number one position. I love that. It just completely speaks of the truth. Now, what helps you most when you're triggered? It's interesting talking it out. I'm not always sure where that goes, but the breathing and the grounding, I don't know what grounding means, so that word always is interesting to me. But being alone, I get really well. And honestly, I don't know what helps. I think whoever those 22% of the folks are, you are really living an honest life. And I think most of us would probably fall in the, I don't know what I do. Because every time I'm triggered, I respond differently. I'm not organized in my brain enough to do the same thing every time. I'm much more leaning towards the disorganized, where chaos is more likely to erupt. So I love the questions and I love the truthfulness of the answers.
Okay, let's go to some questions. Let's start first with a question that came in. Okay. Steve, the first question. I've been in talk therapy for years. I understand my patterns. I've done inner child work, but I still find myself shutting down in relationships. I feel like my body just takes over and I can't control it. Why does this happen? And this is what you mean by experience-based trauma.
So it sounds like they've done a lot of work and it sounds like they're at the edge of the river. They're watching the rapids go by. Because their body is still responding for some reason, and they're having these issues in relationship. What I'm thinking is that they just, it's right there. That they can't, you know, inner child work is wonderful, but inner child work is just work on us. And, you know, when we look at the bigger scheme, that's who we are. Sometimes it's about, let's get in there a little deeper and get into the somatic part of the body, thinking about soma, which is the body, and getting into the body and being able to say, let's bring about some regulation because what you're reporting is safety. They're going to a place of safety. It's safer for me not to go on into relationship. It's safer. I'm getting close and this is what I want, but then I'm getting triggered and I'm not finding safety. So safety seems to be what's missing in that story. And I believe that if they were able to do some somatic work to move some of the trauma out of the way, so to speak, or allow it the freedom to shift and change at a more of a cellular level, that they would, things would change. So they've done the hard part. The hard part's telling the story. The easy part is working somatically and understanding that healing is about acceptance, resistance, and a whole lot of suffering. And I wish I could say that this modality would create a world where you don't suffer, but it doesn't. We suffer because what's waiting to come out moves to the front. It's been there all along since the beginning of time. And all of a sudden, it's right there and there's space for it. It's going to push itself to the front because that suffering, we may not have at the time been able to handle it all. So 10 out of 10 is suffering, let's say. And maybe at the time of the event, we were only able to suffer 5, a response. So now all of a sudden we have a 5 response that makes no sense. Why would this person in relationship push someone away when they so desperately want someone in their life? They're doing it because that 5, that 50% is still telling them some somatic message that maybe they're not good enough, they're not worthy enough, or they haven't suffered enough. And so being able to look at it through those lenses means that, yeah, let me get you on the table. Let's bring about some regulation and see where we go. You're probably not going to be able to go into a relationship next week, but you might next month or next year if we bring about safety in within yourself instead of looking for external safety.
Could we talk about the word safety, what you're mentioning? What does that mean that we're worried, that we're scared? What are we worried? What's that safe that we're looking for?
Well, the safe we're looking for is that place where we can be intimate, be in relationship, where we can learn, where we can be kind to others, where we can pray without knowing, without worrying about whether we're doing it right or wrong, where we can show up at the time when others need us, where we're able to show up for ourselves, but where we're internally, we found the garden. We're in that quiet place. We can come into ourselves. We're not looking for an external, what we call an external locus of control. We're now internally doing the majority of our work, and we can also be external and take stuff from the outside world. But within that, we're not being attacked. We're not going to die. We're not going to be abandoned. We're not going to be judged. All of those things come back to safety.
So being, feeling safe is being able to, you know, while working through certain emotions. These emotions come up many times. We're scared to allow these emotions to come up. Would you say feeling safe is part of that, to feel safe in the emotion, feeling the emotion that we don't like?
Always. That's where we need the most safety, is that emotion we don't like, where we're able to take and go, oh, if I can feel this and I can be with this, I can be safe. It's when that emotion starts driving the car that I'm in trouble. But if I'm in charge of who I am and I have the full body to take something, it's only going to be good. Even if it looks challenging and it looks overwhelming, it's going to be good. If I am in charge, if I'm the one who's guiding, triggers alert me to stay awake at this point in my life. They no longer take over and decide what I'm going to do next. I'm deciding what I'm going to do next. Maybe that means I'm going to go into the woods and sit with the tree. Or maybe that means I'm going to go sit by the river. Or maybe I'm going to go swimming in the river. I know how to take care of myself enough that I don't have to explode and become defensive. Because the moment I come be defensive, I lose. So if I come into the place of agreement, Menachem, if you say to me, I hate your guts, you're a fat, goofy old man, and I go to you back, you know, I have two options there. One, I could go, oh, I've got that, blah, 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 and I can start arguing with you, or I can just go, yeah, Yeah, you're right. And inside me, I know the truth. And the truth is, I'm a different person. That's not who I am. I'm someone who might stop and help a child on the road. I have good parts. And being able to lay over into those is what Transforming Touch does. It begins to expand my abilities. It expands my awareness. Makes everyone around me safer.
Wow. Let me just get a few clarities and then we have a lot of live questions. So the transformative touch is on a table and you're massaging, I guess, certain parts of the brain. And then
Let's Steve explain. How does it work? What does it look like?
How does it work?
Take us into a room.
I'm thinking about the braid. Yes, I'm in the braid, but I'm not really. And I'm not doing any massage. All I'm doing at the brain stem is just touching the back of the head, gently holding the back of the head.
What's the conversation?
What conversation?
Is there a conversation?
No.
It's quiet.
Quiet. It's quiet. You might be having a conversation. If you need to talk, I always say at the beginning, all your parts are welcome here. The ones that need to be quiet as well as the ones that need to talk. Because maybe you're talking to stay safe. Or maybe you feel safe enough you go sound asleep. And sometimes people are sleeping in the session. Sometimes they're dissociating. Dissociation means I've hit overwhelm and I'm now left. And it gets a bad rap. That's an organic response. Anything that we do organically was created by God. And so if we look at dissociation as an act of God, I want to dissociate all the time because I'm going to feel safer. So whatever you're doing on the table, you're doing. But I'm not Gucci Gucci gooing you. I'm not talking to you unless you're talking to me. Other than I've already asked permission in the beginning to touch the back of your head, to touch your adrenals from the outside. I'm just sliding my hand under. I'm not massaging. I'm not doing anything.
How does that play out? Because I'm not understanding. So how does that play out?
Well, you would come into my office and I have a transforming touch table. Looks like a massage table, but it isn't because I live in the state of Texas and I am not licensed to do massage. So I have a transforming touch table to stay legal. I would have you sit in the chair and I would say, you know, Asher, tell me about your week. How was your week? How are things going? And you would tell me. And then I'd say, okay, with your permission, this is what we're going to do today. I'm going to touch you in your right adrenal, your left adrenal, your brainstem, your ankles. We're going to do some limbic insulation. And I'm going to go through everything I do. I'm going to open up your chest and your heart to begin with. Is all that okay with you? And all your parts are welcome here, the ones that want to talk as well as the ones that want to stay quiet. And I'm going to say, if at any moment you become uncomfortable, tell me, and we can stop. No questions asked. Is all that okay with you? Now get on the table, and you get on the table. And I would say, just take a breath and just allow yourself to arrive. Notice your breath. Don't try to change it. And then I might say something like, I'm just going to slide my hand underneath. And I'm coming under your, I might be on your right kidney adrenal and just slide my hand under there and begin to support. And basically I'm just going to sit within myself. And I've got a clock and when 5 minutes are up, maybe in 5 minutes, maybe in 3 minutes, whatever we've decided, I move to the other side quietly. And if you're talking, I'm listening. I'm listening with heart, but I'm listening. I'm hearing what you say, and I'm using active listening. So if you say, I'm feeling nervous, I'm going to go, yeah, you're feeling nervous. And we're going to keep moving, And I'm going to move through all of these points, and then we're going to close up. And once I'm finished, I'm going to help you set up on the side of the table. And usually you're going to be out of balance.
Kol Halashon.
And I'm going to help you stand up to be sure that you're not falling over or completely out of balance as you regulate back into your body. And then I'm going to say goodbye and you're going to leave.
So that shows that it has an effect if you're out of balance afterwards. What else do people feel while they're on the table?
You know, Menachem, I've seen people look like a fish. Their whole bodies flop up and down. I've seen people elevate, the table be here, they elevate 2 or 3 feet
above
the table and be way up higher. I've seen people jerk. I've seen them have all sorts of movements in their bodies. I've seen their feet kick. I've seen their hands. And I've seen some that just lay perfectly still and you think, are they even there? They're so quiet. So I've seen this huge range of reaction on the table. And what we're looking for is we're looking at the activation. And we're looking at activation and we're waiting to see over time that activation begins to reduce. And as the activation reduces, it tells us that their ability to experience the world is increasing. Their awareness is increasing. They might fight it. They might get a cold. I've seen people come in with rashes, that stuff's coming out of their body that they never imagined was inside. I mean, I've seen people get very sick and vomit. I've had kids urinate poop on my table.
Wow.
I've seen lots of things happen in sessions. And I've seen people do absolutely nothing who have miracles happen in their lives. And I'm always scratching my head going, you know, the chevra the next week and say, how did you know this is what I needed? And I'm always like, it wasn't me. I just showed up, but it wasn't me. Thank God. It wasn't me.
Yeah, I have one more question. I'm going to put on the live questions. How does that help? So you're massaging that part of the head. How does that help explain, like, I guess in
law? Actually, you can't say the word massage.
Okay. Because you're not legally licensed?
Exactly.
Right. Not massaging the person's head.
Support. They support. They put their hand and support. They just hold it. That's it.
Your head is sitting.
When you do that, let's focus on the main part. When you do that, a person has a deep-rooted feeling of hurt or something that's deep inside, that even though the talk therapy, they've been doing it for many years, they're smart, they understand the issue, but when it's something that hits them, you know, I always say this is my line, I always say, you see this guy, if I go to synagogue, guy's in his 60s, he has married kids, he's a grandfather, he's successful, he has a business, and all of a sudden, he just starts screaming because somebody sat in his seat, or acts completely insane. It's a complete trigger. You see a guy who's normal, but he has his sensitivities that when you touch that, he goes berserk. And everybody, you know, the people that are suffering from this have that. So my question is, how does this modality, non-massage, support, whatever you want to call it, how does it release those deep-seated hurt, trauma inside?
Maybe we're just meeting those deep-seated hurts. Maybe we're not trying to fix you at all, Usher. Maybe think about it for a moment, what it would have been like for someone to just hold your head in a loving way, in a kind way, without expectation, coming in to support that part of your nervous system that's been keeping you safe through activation your whole life. And now all of a sudden, it's just being supported with a loving, caring touch. Just imagine for a moment what that would feel like. And how different that would be than me trying to talk you out of something or you trying to talk yourself out of something.
It could definitely, I'm just talking logically because I don't know. I've never done it. I'm definitely going to do it. Actually, somebody texted me. But my question is, I want to understand the logic. Like if I go on a stroll and I get pushed, will I feel the same thing? If I be coddled like a baby, is it specifically something with the brain, or just the feeling of love and safety that's making you heal?
I find the older I get, the more I understand that two things are true at the same time. And you just ask two questions and both of them are true.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying it's something with the brain and it's something with feeling coddled and loved as a child.
Yes. Both are true.
Okay. I gotta try it.
You gotta try it. I'm gonna be in Borough Park in just a few weeks.
Wow.
Come over, I'll put you on the table.
Deal. Okay, Ben, you're on.
Hi. It's actually very nice learning about this. When I saw the title, I was for about regular somatic therapy. It was actually nice to hear this type that uses supportive touch. But since I wasn't ready for it, I just had a question. First of all, the way you speak is so in the moment and present. Is that also, is that part of being relaxed and supported? And because I just always feel I'm always all over the place that, your voice is calm and in the moment and grounded. And my second question is, I did my own somatic therapy, as we call it, not with what you discussed exactly, but more putting the hand on the heart and those type of things. And it does help a lot, but after a while it gets maybe boring, or my brain wants to like fire in 20 ways and wants to rush the process and doesn't give somewhere, like, I don't have the capacity to hold space for it. And like, I don't know, just wants to escape it. Like I'm able to, and sometimes it's just, I know, it's like, I know the process so quick. So you want to do it rush and nothing happens. So like, an advice I can do when I'm dealing with stuff myself and I'm sending love to myself and just starting to get distracted a lot and firing thoughts again, thinking it's going to go very quickly.
Good question, Ben. I think that I want you to know that we don't heal by ourselves. Nobody heals alone. No one. We heal in relationship. So you're on the right road when you're talking about, I'm doing somatic and I put my hand on my chest, on my heart, but then I try to rush it and I'm trying to get bored. All of those things are very true. Because what I'm hearing you say is you're doing it by yourself. You're trying to heal Ben all by yourself. And healing doesn't work that way. So for me and for people I work with and students that I teach them all the time how to just to be with you without fixing you. You know, if somebody was sitting next to you or beside you, and maybe they put their hand on your heart, whether that was actually doing it or intentionally doing it, I think that you would notice a change. But I hear in your voice, I hear a yearning to be heard, a yearning to be with. And so my wish for you is that someone joins you in that healing process, that you're able to heal in relationship with someone who is safe, who doesn't want anything from you, who is showing up just to be with Ben.
Are you referring to like a therapist? I mean, I've learned this from therapy, but a therapist is not there 24 hours with you. That's why they teach you the tools.
Yeah. I'm not teaching you the tools. The only tool that I ever teach anyone is to go for a walk, to stand on wet grass in the morning and feel the morning dew, to touch a tree, to walk in nature. That's the only thing I'm doing. I'm not going to teach you to go home and try to heal developmental trauma by yourself, because we're traumatized developmentally. We've already been alone. We've already had an unavailable caretaker for some reason who wasn't able to hold us and rock us and to spend the time with us that we needed. Maybe they were busy. Maybe there was no choice about it. So I'm not going to tell you to go home by yourself and do something. I'm going to tell you, and you don't have to have a therapist. You could have, we have lots of different kinds of practitioners. You could have a partner, a wife or any sort of partner, maybe your mom or your dad who sits with you, who could learn how to just to be with you without fixing you. But I would never tell someone with developmental trauma to do it by themselves. That's why I'm not a big mindfulness person, because we've already sat by ourselves. We already sat alone. It's okay at this point in our lives to let somebody else show up and be with us, Ben.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your questions.
I would add to the balance, because obviously you can't be 24/7 with somebody else. So it's important to have the support from others. Don't try to do it on your own. And then there are, what could you do when you're on your own? Like Steve mentioned, you know what to do. You'd go for a walk. You know how to be there for yourself. I just want to mention that this itself, that we want to fix ourselves, that's not having that acceptance relationship. You want to have somebody who you don't have to change. You don't have to fix anything. We're just showing up. This is who you are. And this is who you are, and I'm here.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's very powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve, let's go to the next live question. You're on. Hello, hello. Hi. Hi.
Are you muted?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, sorry. I think a lot of this was answered by Ben's question. I've done a lot of somatic work to both uncover and to heal from sexual abuse. I still don't remember all of it, but a lot of it is like manifested in my life with money issues and issues around like self-worth and safety in relationships. Does this help? I'm curious to hear what Stephen's thoughts are on this, and does this help with traumas that we don't fully remember, like we haven't spoken about for years in talk therapy?
Yeah. All I see is hi, so I'm going to call you hi. So I would say hi that probably 35 to 40% of everyone I see has had sexual abuse at a very young age, some in infancy. We'll never know the full story. Those are times that we don't remember. We don't remember, 3 to 5 years of our life. Some of us don't remember 12 and under. I see people at all different ages. It helps because if you imagine that there's a hallway, and in that hallway it's just packed with all these people in the hallway, and all those things are things that happen to us, and it's so packed, nobody can move. And then we bring about a bit of regulation, and one person gets out of the way. We have more room. And so our story is our story on the sexual abuse. And if we remember it, we don't need to remember every explicit detail. We may, and that's okay. But in order to heal, it's about being with someone safe enough to hold that space where they're not intruding in us or jumping into our life or trying to decide what's bad or what's good, but listening to you and being able to build up your somatic self to where all of those experiences, they're going to be a story. You're going to have a story to tell, hi. And that story is very important. And that story also may be ever changing. It may not be the same story tomorrow that it is today or next week. It may change. And it changes when you have more space to decide, more room to make come to another choice. And so, no, you don't have to remember every detail. But the details you remember are very important. And being able to tell those stories is extremely important for your healing. And being able to hear somebody hear the story and not tell you that you're wrong, not tell you that you misunderstood, and not tell you what to do next is how you heal with someone in that healthy, secure relationship.
Wait, can I expand the question a little bit?
Sure.
What if I, like, don't even feel like it happened to me because I'm still so dissociated from it? Like, there's, like, two people.
Yeah, thank God. Your body is working the way it was designed. You don't have the capacity yet for the story to fully materialize, for it to be who you are, for you to join the story, so to speak. You're still looking backwards from a protective stance. Your body's protecting you from the whole reality of what it sounds like you're aware of, and your body's protecting you. So until we get some more resilience on board, you can talk yourself till you turn purple, but it's not going to help. We need to get more resilience on board, where your story and your dissociation isn't your go-to place, where you can live with overwhelm for a little bit.
How do you get more resistance on board?
By building somatic trust back into your system, coming in and bringing that regulation in, bringing in somatic trust, someone who's able to work with you is the only way I know how to do it is by doing transforming touch. It's the only thing I know that has truly worked, where it's not coming in and judging you or trying to change you. It's really about holding space with God and holding space with where you are and being able to rebuild the trust in your somatic self to where your cost of doing business begins to reduce. And as it reduces, you got some suffering coming. You got some resistance coming, but you got some healing coming. Mm-hmm. And being able to be with that healing is where I think is most important.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking the question. I appreciate you and I hear you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, beautiful. Let's go to the next live question you're on.
Hi. First, I want to thank the last two people who asked, because both their questions were helpful, and your responses. So I've done not this technique, but similar work, somatics, with other people in community, and I feel like I made a tremendous amount of headway in my healing, but because much of the trauma was developmental, I still feel that there's a piece that's lacking in the healing because it's not coming from the caregivers that it should have provided it to me. So I can continue to work with somatics and reparenting, but it still doesn't feel whole, like the circle's fully mended. There's a little piece that's still cracked. So how do you work through that when the body, like I've had to do work to titrate my body to touch in certain places from abuse and things like that. But I still feel there's a missing piece. And I guess I'll also add a second question, maybe if there's opportunity, about when you speak about God. So I feel like there's also a disconnect in my ability to deeply connect and pray to God. And wondering when you say to, like, that relationship with God, how that plays in here.
Okay, sure. So it sounds to me like you've done the hard work. It sounds like you've done a lot of stuff already. And it sounds like you've moved in a direction towards healing. I think that it's my experience, you know, there's developmental trauma and there's shock trauma. And shock trauma is when we have a life, something occurs, disrupts our life, and we go back to the life that we had before. That's shock trauma. Developmental trauma has no life before. There's nowhere to go back to. It, from the very beginning, things begin to get dislodged and discombobulated. So what I hear you saying is that you've done a lot of shock trauma work. And I think that if we look at it from developmental trauma, the piece that's missing is the unknown. And when I talk about God, why wouldn't you be angry with God? Why wouldn't you be disconnected from God? All of that would be normal. And it's part of our healing is when we're able to realize and forgive God. Because if there was a God, why in the world would I have had all the trauma I had in my life? I went through those words many, many times. And so when I hear your story, it's like, oh, this is a great person to work with because the story's been told. Let's see what happens now. Let's work on some somatic trust, some somatic repair, coming in and building trust again in your system, building up your resilience, allowing you to have a different choice, to make a different choice in your life. And I think that if we look at it from that standpoint, you've talked enough. You've done all the work.
Yeah.
Now we need to go into that faith part. We need to go into that part and go, okay, let's see what the nonverbal part of you has to say. And it's going to speak through your body. It's going to come through your body loud and clear. So I would say, let's find out. Let's be curious enough to find out what it would be like to reestablish somatic trust in your body and not where you have to talk yourself into that somatic trust, but where it's more organic and natural.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Just to continue the question, do we need those people to come around to be part of the healing, or the healing can happen by you doing the work and even if they're not on boards?
Healing happens within me. Between me, it's my healing. I do not need my perpetrator to admit that they did bad things to me, even if they're dead. I don't need them to come from the other side to try to do any sort of healing with me. My healing is about me being able to live with what all happened to me. All of the sexual abuse, the mental abuse, the physical abuse. I have to be able to live with that within myself. And I find that most of us would not trust our perpetrator to show up and be honest anyway. They've already hurt us in unspeakable ways. Why all of a sudden do we think that they would be an upfront person anyway? So let's heal together from the inside out. And as I heal me, that's good enough. I don't care if you heal, if you're my perpetrator. I pray that you heal, and I pray for my perpetrator perpetrators all the time, even though most of them have passed on. I pray for them. I wouldn't have 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I might have been praying that bad things happened to them. But I don't need anybody to be with me for my healing. What I need is a trusted person who can come in and be with me without judgment as I go through the process of reestablishing the somatic trust, reestablishing resilience in my system. Taking back what was taken away from me. Reclaiming. You know, they used to say reclaiming the pie. I don't know if you've ever heard that. They would go through life, would give out slices of pie to all these people who take our pie from us, and they're emotionally taking stuff and dysregulation. Well, I want my pie back. Perpetrators don't need to have my pie. I want my pie back. And so I'm always getting pieces of pie back.
Yes, Steve, let's go to the next live question. You're on.
Yeah, hi. So I actually have just started TEB. I had like 3 sessions already. And I understand that window of tolerance, totally. It's like magical. The other question I had was when you said at time of conception, you are carrying generational trauma. How does that work? Like in a large family, like if let's say I'm one of the youngest from a very large family. So how would it be like everyone is carrying generational trauma or how does that work?
Yeah, exactly. But we don't know. You know, this is where it gets a little bit complicated because let's say you have 100% developmental generational trauma. You might have got 100% of it and one of your siblings only got 10% of it. We don't know how the distribution's going to exactly go, but what we know is that all of you are getting it until it's resolved. Or till there's been a healing, that trauma is coming down. It's coming down generationally. But as you heal, your siblings get the benefit of your healing, as well as all the generations below you. So you're healing upline and downline at the same time when you're healing. So as you begin to bring that healing about, it's going to affect everyone. But it's unusual that all of you would have the same amount of trauma. All the siblings would get the same amount of generational trauma. You're all going to get a percentage of it, but we don't really know how it's going to affect. And some people have, like one of your siblings may have a wonderful sense of pushing through and really show that, oh, life is great. I'm really smart. I'm excelling in school and I'm excelling in life and relationship. And they're working overtime for that to happen. And one of your siblings may be struggling every day just to get out of bed. So we don't know how it's going to affect siblings. What we do know is that when you come in and it's about your healing, and as your healing begins to happen, vibrationally it goes out and energetically it begins to heal those around you. So exactly, I don't know.
Wow.
But I can tell you that things are going to change around you. And maybe they won't physically or mentally or emotionally change these people around you, but you're going to change how you interact with them.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely see it because I've done a lot of different modalities. And one more question. When you were saying that when you're like disassociating, when you're like, I feel like I'm out of my body, all of a sudden, like I'm, What is that? You saying that it's okay, or what is it when I'm like, and I get that like even with meditations and stuff, like all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know where I went.
Right. That's because you've been alone before. This is not the time for you to be alone. Your healing is going to happen in relationship, and it sounds like that's what you're choosing at this point in your life. So dissociation is a normal organic response to overwhelm. When something is so much, I can't be with it any longer. I leave my body. I leave and I separate. I might watch what's happening to me. I might still be present, but I'm not in my body anymore. I've dissociated. I've left that space. That is organically how we are designed to handle overwhelm.
Wow.
Without drugs, without any sort of medication. It becomes a problem if we're always dissociated. Yes. But through regulation work, we can begin to dissociate less and less. And what happens is we begin to establish a relationship with our trauma. We establish a relationship with what we're going through. And so life begins to shift at that point.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the question.
Amazing. Here's a question somebody sent in. I grew up in a chaotic home where emotions weren't safe. Now, even when things are calm, I live in this constant low-level tension. People tell me to relax, but I don't even know what safety feels like in my body. Can you explain how TB helps someone like me? Or maybe first understand what's going on before TB.
Well, you know, the way I, what I would say is that that's the typical, when is the other shoe going to drop syndrome? That's when we've lived in chaos so much that we're always under threat. Life was never without threat. If we're looking at attachment, that's really, we come in and we start thinking about disorganized attachment. Because in order to have that, we have to be under that threat. Disorganized attachment is where I am all the time. All of my clients show up with some level of disorganized attachment because of the threat that they've been under. Transforming touch is going to help because through that somatic trust that we're building within your system and the regulation that we're reestablishing, you're going to be able to allow, maybe that threat's not going to leave you, but you're going to be aware of the threat. You're going to be able to say, you know, even though I feel threatened, I can still enjoy my family. I can still enjoy dinner. I can still enjoy a sunrise and a sunset. I can begin to notice that it costs me a lot to live in that place of threat. And it costs less to live with that place of threat than to live in it. So knowing about it changes the cost of doing business, and it begins to build more resilience in your body and in your life. So yeah, that constant threat. When is the next shoe? You know, everybody may be safe now, but they're not going to be safe in 2 minutes. So I have to stay on alert. I've been there. I understand that way of living, not knowing when somebody was going to go off the deep end and when somebody was going to get hurt, and being able to build resilience to where today I still have that threat part of me is still there waiting. But I'm living with it. It's no longer driving the bus. I'm just living with it. I can look at it and go, oh yeah, there it is. There's my old friend. I remember you. How are you doing? Welcome. Yeah, I don't need you right now. Why don't you go sit on a park bench? When I need you, I'll come get you and send it to the park bench.
It sounds like people are constantly living in that control mode of, I need to make sure that things work out. And always be ready for all of the possibilities of things that might happen in any moment. And then they can never let go. They can never stop. They're in control.
Of course. So that's true. And I can shift it to living with it instead of it taking me over and it telling me how to live my life. I can now go, okay, this is all true, and this is all possible, and this is all reality, but right at this moment, it doesn't need to control my life. But to get to that place, I have to have more resilience, because it's actually keeping me safe. And if you try to explain that to someone, they're going to argue with you. What do you mean it's keeping me safe? Well, you're not having to interact with other people. You're not having to push that envelope, so to speak. You're not having to learn something new. It's keeping you back here. It's holding you back in a place that your body believes that in this fear, you are safe. So I want to change your body's way of thinking where your body doesn't have to rely on fear to be safe, that maybe there's a possibility that there's another way, but we don't know what it's going to be yet. We don't know.
Okay, let's go to the next live question. You're on.
Hi. Yes, hi. I wanted to know what you thought of using psychedelics to treat trauma with an experienced and responsible guide.
I am not trained in psychedelics, so I don't, my opinion is basically useless, because that's not my area of expertise. What I do know is that if you're doing, from all the research that I have done, and you're using somebody responsible, I think that that's fine if you're getting, I also think that you need ongoing regulation work. And I think that something like Transforming Touch could be extremely supportive of that experience. And looking at it through that lens, I believe we need to be safe when we're doing it. And I think that safety comes in. I'm reading all sorts of things that are positive. I also know that I get a lot of clients, especially in the community, in the religious community, who have done psychedelics, and they have stopped doing them because they're saying that the work on the table and the Transforming Touch, they're getting very similar experiences. They're getting those out-of-body experiences, and they're getting those memories, and they're getting those similar reactions. So to say, what do I think of it? I'm not educated enough to have an opinion, other than the opinion that regulation is a good thing to support the experience and to have ongoing support on a weekly basis with someone who can be with you no matter what you've tried or what you've done, to stay with you through that process.
Thank you.
Next live question, Coria.
Hi, good evening. So,
she said Pete twice that he had.
I listen every week, so thank you for continuing this. So my question is, I've done a significant amount of CBT. I've also done EMDR to overcome domestic abuse and also being present at the taking my mother off life support and being with my father when he passed away from cancer. I was his caregiver for the last 3 weeks, 24 hours a day. So that was a little rough, 4 months apart. The thing I struggle with is I am an adopted child. So what I've recently, with my therapist, we've done a little bit deeper digging about the emotions associated with that. Being adopted in the 60s, nobody spoke about it. I just knew I was adopted and was the rescue baby of parents who were married for 10 years with 8 miscarriages. So I'm like I was this like prized possession. And it's only taken me now, my parents are dead 10 years, for me to actually be able to say what they didn't do in my childhood. I always painted this really rosy picture of, I really did have an idyllic childhood. I was short of nothing. I was treasured, but they didn't have emotion. They didn't talk about feelings and they weren't very demonstrative. Their attitude was, we show you we love you. We don't tell you we love you. So this is like unpacking, and I enter my spaces now as an adult where I never really feel enough. Even though intellectually I know I am, but emotionally my self-esteem always goes to I'm not enough in this space. So how do you heal from, like, what do you do to be your best self knowing that you've got these pieces that are missing, that you lived most of your life not wanting to disappoint two people who cherished you?
Take a breath. You said some very interesting things in your story. It's been my experience, and I've worked with thousands and thousands of adoptions. And it's been my experience that adoptions always have a core belief of abandonment. they're going to get dumped again. You've been dumped once, and now you're going to be abandoned again. Then you came on with this interesting words, and you referred to yourself as a prized possession. And that broke my heart.
Why?
Nobody owns us. You weren't owned. So what happens to a prized possession when the owner dies? We end up hanging in a closet all by ourselves, like an old shirt, or an old dress, or a pair of shoes. And then I'm hearing you that lost, sense of lost comes through in your story of I've done EMDR, I've done these things. Well, EMDR helps us live through, you know, basically it clears the highway, the superhighway between our left and right brain, our corpus callosum. It clears that of trauma so that messages flow back and forth and it reduces the activation level. But when you tell your story, you're still picking up all of these points. And all of those are significant trauma that never reduced. So as an EMDR therapist, I oftentimes do EMDR along with transforming touch. I want some regulation on board, and then I'm doing little pieces instead of big pieces. CBT is a wonderful therapy, but it rarely works for developmental trauma because we don't have the story. With CBT, we have a concept, and we're changing the way we look at something. Well, we could change all day long how we look at adoption, Corinne, all day long, and you would still be adopted.
Mm-hmm.
You would have still been abandoned. You would still be at loss. You would still be hurt. And you still wouldn't have got what you needed in life. So at this point, I would say, take a breath. Let's just start over in little micro bites, not big pieces, micro bites of who you are. Build some regulation. Build some resilience. See how the story changes. See what the possibilities are. See what is sitting there waiting for you. But right now, you're in a tornado of developmental trauma.
So which system do you trigger? The adrenals, the basal ganglia, the brainstem? Where do you go?
Well,
with touch.
I go to the adrenals. I go to open the heart. I want to open up the thymus. I want to be aware of those. I want to go to the brainstem where your autonomic nervous system lives. I want to begin to build regulation. And that regulation is somatic, so it's not going to have a story yet. And then build some resilience and then wait for the story. It's going to take time, Corinne. I don't know anyone who's adopted, who has lived, and I'm assuming you've been on the earth at least 50 years. And so
60.
that amount of time says, you know, it's going to take a bit of work. You know, you're a piece of work. If somebody says that, they're not joking.
Mm-hmm.
You just go, yeah, I'm a piece of work, but I also deserve to have a life different. And for the next 20 or 30 years or 50 years of your life, it'd be nice to have some regulation and some self-worth to come back in and to free you from being owned.
How do you find, like I live in Maryland, just outside in Silver Spring, outside of DC. So how do you find not quack therapists who says they are, have this somatic intervention? I mean, everyone could get certified. I'm an occupational therapist. I understand about certification, but I want a skilled person. How do we get that list of providers that's close by to where we live? Can't come to Texas, unfortunately.
One of the ways we'd go to co-regulating touch, AustinAttached.com. Another would be to go to AustinAttached.com and send me an email.
Okay.
We have providers in Silver Spring.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. We have actually some really good providers there. We have some religious providers in Silver Spring as well as some not as religious providers. But, yeah, Silver Spring, we definitely have people there. Bought several times in Silver Spring. So, you know, reach out.
Can you share your email again? The text is what?
My email address is Steve, S-T-E-V-E, at AustinAttach, AustinAttach.com.
Thank you so much.
You email me and I'll find you a provider.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for being so vulnerable tonight. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Amazing, amazing. Okay, so here's a question that came in. I recently became a parent and I noticed myself reacting in ways I swore I never would, especially when my child cries or clings to me. It's like something gets activated deep inside of me. How does this early trauma live in the body and how does TV help break this cycle?
Wow. Oh, talk about vulnerable. You know, if we have a baby, we're supposed to be loving and kind and sweet and we're not ever going to do what our parents did to us. Ha, ha, ha. We are programmed to respond just the way we were raised. Our teacher, we learn the greatest lessons in life through modeling. And our models were our parents. So in order to say I was going to be different means that I'm not in agreement with myself. So if we come in and we look at parenting from the aspect of, yeah, this is all real. I am going to act just like these people acted. And then we're able to bring in some regulation with that. And we're able to do something like transforming touch or whatever to bring about some regulation in our system. When we bring that regulation into our system, then the possibility of something different becomes much more apparent. And up until then, we're going to behave just like our parents did. No matter how angry we get, how much we jump up and down, or we go to the extreme opposite, which is just as detrimental to our child. And we can't find that soft middle ground to land in. So without regulation, without building some resilience, we're going to repeat those same behaviors. So the best thing to do, if you have a baby and you're already responding that way, when you feel that coming on, give that baby to your partner and go for a walk. Tell them that I need to build some resources within myself right now and start figuring out how to not go to overload, not wait. You know, if the baby's crying, maybe I need to move in quickly to the baby so the baby, I can pick the baby up and hold the baby, but only hold the baby when I feel safe. If I'm feeling activated, put the baby down. Put the baby down first. The baby that needs to be held is the one that's holding the baby. So hold that baby. Figure out how to build some resilience to where with that extra space, I can choose differently, even for a split second, to where you don't repeat those patterns. That's why over and over and over and over, we see families responding the same way and the same things happening because there is no resilience being established in that family system.
Okay, let's go to the next live question. Hi, Ira.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Can't hear me?
Nah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me now? Okay. All right, Steve, I have a question for you I wrote down, and it is dysregulation the same as disconnection to God, and is finding regulation the same as finding a stronger connection to God? Just kind of had that thought.
Is dysregulation the same as disconnection with God?
Yes.
State of dis, dysregulation, we are not connected to God. We might be doing spiritual bypassing, which means, oh, I'm so with God, and oh, God is doing oh, and oh, and oh, and oh, and oh, and everything in our life is being blamed on God. Like God's every aspect, and we have nothing that we have any awareness of. Sometimes we spiritual bypass there. And so it can look like God, but it's really a spiritual bypassing that's taking place. So that is truly a disconnect. When we have regulation, we have the opportunity to connect with God. We have the opportunity in regulation to see that little dark part of the river, to be able to look down and go, oh, that's where I want to be. I want to be there and out of the turbulence and into the softness of God, into that awareness. Now, you know, God isn't always gentle. Believe me. He can grab us by the tail and twist us in the air really quickly. But at least we know that when it's happening, we're in relationship and we're not dysregulated. We're actually in a place of regulation where we're learning about the world around us, or we're learning about ourselves, or we're learning how to move forward. So more regulation, more God. Less regulation, less God.
Thank you very much. Can I ask another part to that question? Just of like, do you, when you're working with your clients, do you ever pray for them? Like quietly?
All the time. Mm. I'm praying for you right now. Mm. All the time. I am in constant prayer.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much. Thank you for your work and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Dude, can you be a practitioner if you're not a loving, nice person?
Oh, my. Oh, no. Oh, if I'm not a loving, nice person, why would I want to be a practitioner? So I can mess people up? That's a very fascinating question. If I'm not a loving, nice person.
You're giving over. When you speak,
it's about wanting to be one. It's about wanting to be a nice person.
When you speak, you're healing. You're giving over a feeling of safety and love and calmness. So I could imagine if I was on Steve's non-massage table, I would feel so relaxed and healed. But if I was on somebody's table, be like, okay, next, okay, shake my head. I'll be like, what the heck is this? So is it connected to the practitioner?
Yes.
Or is it just a modality, like going for like shock therapy?
I've had shock therapy. It wasn't much fun. I could tell you that if a practitioner is a mess, they can still be a practitioner as long as they can leave the mess in the hallway. And for that 45 to 50 minutes or an hour, ever how long they're with you, to be able to sit with God or to sit in their own peace, we have a much better chance. But if I'm not going to a next therapist, let's just, and I don't anybody, you know, if we have to pull a number when we walk in, like we're at the meat market, and number 72, come get on the table, it's your, if I can't fall in love with the client, I don't want them. I love all my clients. I care about my clients. I think about my clients between sessions. I think about people in my life. I think about them with a soft heart. And I pray about them with a soft heart. So I don't want to go to grumpy therapist. There's times I might be grumpy with you under the guise of maybe it'll help you today. And I might be boldly honest with you and tell you the truth, because I'm not good. I'm on the spectrum, so I'm not real good at lying. So I might come right at you and tell you, you know, you might say something. I might say, well, you know, this may be true about you, but no, I think I choose nice any day over next.
Yeah, let's tackle a few more questions before we go to the end. Somebody sent in a very interesting question. I do find times that I react by triggered by my coworker's spouse. However, looking back at my childhood, I can't really remember any traumatic events. Is it always from the childhood, or can it be picked up later on in life? Can these triggers or these traumas we're talking about be not from childhood? Is that a possibility?
Well, they could be generational. So they could be upline and you wouldn't know about it because somebody else had experienced them. So that's always a possibility when we go upline, because we're not going to know exactly. Where they're coming from is not near as important as why they're happening. And so if we look at it, we go, you're being triggered because of overwhelm. You're not able to, things aren't rolling off your back, so to speak. You're grabbing hold to them. You're grabbing, they're shooting arrows at you and you're grabbing the arrows. Why are you grabbing those arrows? We don't know. Let's build some regulation and then maybe you're not going to be as triggered. And then maybe your life's going to be easier. And maybe you'll have more opportunity to respond in a safer way. We don't have to know the story. And you know, a lot of times, Usher, things happen to us and we forget because we were dissociating. A lot of bad things happen in dissociation and we just forget.
I just want to, we have a few more live questions. I want to get to a few more questions, but I was talking to Steve right before we got on, literally 3 minutes before. I was just mentioning to him, like, I feel like our parents or our grandparents, like, this whole concept of this deep feeling and this, like, they just sucked it all down. And they just went to the death with that. That's the way they lived. They didn't, weren't busy with their feelings. They weren't busy with these things. Yes, they were uptight and yes, they were not soft and gentle and loving. But this was like not a factor. This seems like in this generation, like the last 10, 20 years, and then the new kids, like they're all about their feelings. It's like a generation of like pouring out of emotional feeling and sensitivities and like deep inner hurt. So Steve, so what's your opinion on that?
Thank God. Thank God we're waking up.
You realize I just called you a young guy.
You called me what?
I called you Generation Z guy.
Oh. You know, it's funny. When you were telling the story, Usher, it's almost like you wish it were the old way.
Yeah.
Instead of the new way. I heard that very clearly.
I don't like the new one.
No, you don't, do you?
Nope.
No. I wonder why. Where's the threat?
You want to know personally my personal threat on that?
Sure. Why not?
I guess it's a feeling of like getting stuck in these emotions. Like at the end of the day, like you want to accomplish, you want to do, you want to like live. I feel like there's a fear for me personally of just getting stuck in that trauma feeling sense. Where again, if you know, like again, back in the logic, right? You actually said this comment again. I wanted to clarify, you know, normal people go from the stomach up, trauma people go from the brain down. Cause I like everything to make sense and it should. Okay, fine. I got a trauma. We'll take 2 aspirins. We'll go to Florida for 3 days. We'll get a non-massage from Steve and we're good to go. But when you start going into this like never end, never land with Peter Pan, does it actually end or just the emotional roller cycle, emotional roller coaster that just keeps on going and going? That's, I guess, my thing.
It makes total sense, doesn't it? Because the people that modeled for you didn't have emotions. They didn't show their emotions. They held everything close to their chest. You know that everything's right here. I'm going to hold on to it and I'm going to go to work every day and I'm going to raise my kids and my kids are all going to go and everything's going to be great. Yeshiva, everything's perfect. Everybody's going to do what they're supposed to do. And then we have you, Usher, who has lived his life logically. And now all of a sudden these emotions, it's not the emotions of others you're worried about, it's your emotions. Because you don't know where they're going to take you. you don't know where you're going to wind up because you've never been there before. So I understand completely why you feel the way you feel is because it's safer to be logical, safer to hold everything close. And here I am saying,
control.
Yeah, control. Ugh. And here I am saying, let's just live, Usher. Let's just live. Maybe in that emotion, you're going to find happiness and maybe a sense of joy that you've never experienced in your life. That's going to be so magnificent that your head just blows up. Who knows? Who knows? But it's too late for you, Usher. You're already on the trail of emotion. It's unfolding right now as I speak and you sit there listening. It's already with us. We're on that trail. So enjoy because it's going to keep unfolding.
It's so scary. How do we hold? How do we support?
Be with each other. You two are friends. Be with each other. Listen to each other. Find a transforming touch therapist. You know, that would be my go-to answer, but it isn't. My go-to answer is be with each other. Menachem, you know Usher's fears. Usher, you know Menachem's fears. Go for a walk and don't say anything for 6 blocks. 6 blocks, no conversation. Just walk with each other. And you'll be surprised. 6 blocks.
Not run. Walk. No.
Walk. Stroll, if you will. But start out walking. Then you'll stroll. And do it. Just make an agreement. We're going to go for 6 blocks once a week and see what happens. You'll be shocked. And Usher, there's plenty of rooms for your emotions. And at this point in my life, I know no one who's gotten caught in their emotions and didn't go through them. They all have another side. They always, always have a way out. And you're still in control of yourself. You can just say, stop. They'll go away.
Why does it seem that some people, it comes up at certain times and it just like seems like you can't stop it? It's like people live their whole life with control and they're pushing this. I mean, I'm reading the book Letting Go, right? You familiar with the book Letting Go?
I'm not a big fan of Letting Go, but yes. Not the book Letting Go. I like the book. But the concept that Letting Go,
The book he really explains that basically we live a lot of our life with really suppressing our emotions, right? We go through things, okay, it's good, and you push it and you push and you push. And then it just reaches a certain point in your life, whenever it is. It could be something triggers it. It could be a life event. It could be anything. It could be just that your body holds a score, whatever you want to call it, just comes out. And then when it comes out, it's like, it's coming out. So that's really, okay, his method of letting go, it's his method. And I agree with you that it works for certain people, but if you have the deep root of trauma, it's a complete waste of time because it's not really gonna get to that letting go of it.
How do you talk so fast?
I'm from New Jersey, New York.
If
I was from Texas, I would speak really slow and calm.
Would you do that?
Let's switch. Let's see what happens.
All right. I can almost talk really fast if I really get going really quick, but I probably can't do it. But I'm going to slow down. Oh, why does it all of a sudden appear? Is because you got a glimpse. You got a little tiny glimpse.
Kol Halashon.
I thought it could be different. That's why. You just got a glimpse, Usher. Somewhere you saw someone that was happy. And it stuck. And you went, I wonder why they're happy. And there comes the emotion. There comes the process. It's just a glimpse. It's all it takes to change our direction.
Okay, let's take one more live question, and then we will go to the closing part. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi. Thank you so much for the program. We really learned so much. It's a really unique program, and all the speakers that you get really well thought out, so I wanted to thank you for that first. My question is that I have a son who's 13 years old. About 4 or 5 years ago, he had to switch schools due to academic difficulties, and his younger brother is still in that school. And he's constantly has a very hard time. He's happy where he is. But the fact that the younger brother is in that school, he's constantly mocking the school, the name of the school, and everything that, you know, the school stands for, is its standards, its policies. And he can't let go. As much as any way we speak with him about it, any way we tell him, you know, it's enough already, it became already an obsession. It doesn't let him live, and it really causes a lot of chaos in the house. How do we deal with this?
I would start out by agreeing with him. I would start out by just really listening to what he has to say, and don't try to change his mind, and don't try to blame him. He's hurting. You're telling me that you have a 13-year-old son who is devastated. He's living in so much pain. And he's striking out. He's fighting. So when we look at fight, flight, you know, he's right there on the edge. He's really fighting with all he's got. That's a bad school. That's a bad blah, blah, you know, everything's blah, 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 blah. And he has all these excuses and all these reasons. Until you find it in your heart to agree with him, just really diffuse him by agreeing. Yeah, that school was blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it was.
We can't really say that because his younger brother is in the school. His younger brother, 3 years younger than him, is in the school, and he's doing well. And we can't put down the school because his younger brother is in school and is doing well.
You're not going to put down the school. You're going to agree with your son.
He's saying the school is terrible. The school is they don't know how to teach.
Right. He's correct. It didn't work for him.
Right. So we do tell him, you know, it didn't work. It doesn't. No school is good for everyone. There are schools that are good for you, and there are schools that are good for him.
Hear what you just did. You just switched over into a fixed mode. So you be him and I'll be you.
Okay.
You start rambling like you're him.
This school is so dumb. Like, I don't even know why he's in the school. They don't know how to teach. They're weird. They're crazy.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? It is a good question. Wonder why.
So take him out of the school also. Take him out of school. Why is he there?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that your brother's having a different experience.
But it's so stupid. Why is he there?
Yeah. You're really wondering why your brother's being successful there, aren't you?
Wouldn't he feel bad now that, oh, he's smarter than me. He's doing good. If I was like him, if I was smarter, if I was better academically, I would be able to be there. Because I know he really wanted to be in that school. He just couldn't keep up.
He couldn't, could he?
Right. So what, by telling him that.
How do you feel about that?
I feel also very bad for him.
You feel bad for him?
Sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't done in a nice way. I think it could have been done in a much more dignified and refined way. It was kind of just like, you know, they kind of just dropped him. There was no closure from the school. You know, we would like you to be here. We feel another school would be better for you. It was kind of like, this is so-and-so. Where's your son going next year? Well, that's the way that it was. So it was just dropped.
You know, I don't want to get into a session here, but I'm curious to know, why do you send your other son there?
It just, it just, It's considered a very good school. It has good education, but just, I guess they didn't know how to deal with kids who are not, you know, on that level.
So your, that's interesting response, isn't it? That your experience with that school was not good.
Right.
But other people say it is good.
It works for most kids, but not, but they wouldn't know how to deal with certain type of kids.
Right.
They're not equipped for that. They admit they're not equipped for that.
Right. So, you know, what I would say is this is a much longer conversation than we could have here, but I would say to you, everything your son's saying is how you feel. He's just voicing your feelings. You're just as disappointed of what happened to him and the way they treated him as he is.
It's true,
You're hurting too. You're hurting.
I guess I'm just able to control. Absolutely correct. Absolutely spot on. I just feel like I'm able to control myself and say, okay, listen, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, we take what we could take. What's good is good and what's not is good. All our relationships with people are sometimes hurtful, that people, even friends who sometimes say things that hurt us or bother us. No friend is 100% safe and secure. And that's how we live and that's how we deal with everyone.
That's a lot of rationalization.
That's just the world that I see. I see, you know, you're speaking about walking the street 6 blocks. There's always, you know, feelings that.
He's 13. He's 13. Maybe, you know why we said Shiva? We all sit in sadness together, don't we?
Right.
Maybe you need to sit Shiva with your son over the school. Maybe he needs to know that you're hurting and you're just as disappointed as he is.
I told him, I don't think it was nice the way they dealt with you. It wasn't right. But you know, in life, things are not always fair.
I want you to throw all your butts out the window and I just want you to be with him and to share your pain. That's all I want. No buts. No but. This is life. No but. It could be different. No but. They did the best they could. It's about let's swim in this muddy water together for a little bit and let him know that he's not alone in his sadness. He's picking up your feelings. I guarantee you, you've just described a kid who is very connected to his dad and he's just acting out your inner self. So, take a moment and just sit with him in the sadness.
Even after, let's say, 4 or 5 years, I should just sit down and tell him, I feel very bad. How do you feel about it? And just say, I hear you. It's hard. It's tough.
Yeah. It's hard. And I feel horrible too. I feel angry of what they did to you. I'm still mad about what they did to you.
So he'll ask the question you asked me. So why are you still connected with them? Why don't you take out our brother?
I wonder that too. I wonder why you're still connected. I wonder. So you're right on target. Just sort that out and get some regulation on board to where you can suffer with him.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
Steve, we're going to do one more live one. Is that okay?
Okay.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Just a minute. Yeah, I don't know if it's the right place to ask my question, but I'm beyond desperate. So my question is, I suffer from complex trauma since childhood, and I'm married, and we deeply care about each other, and my husband is kind of an addict, and he's not ready or willing to come out of denial. So I live in trauma mode a lot of the time. My life is often very unpredictable. I'm discouraged. You know, I'm just discouraged. And of course, you know, money is part of the addiction. And I do work and the money goes for the grocery. I don't know of good therapists anyways where I live. And if I did know, there's no money. I don't know if this is a place to ask this question. I know it probably isn't. thought, I don't know, maybe I have some words of encouragement.
I hear you. I really hear you, Leah. And, you know, the most encouragement I could give you is that your story isn't unusual. And if it would be possible for you to realize that your trauma and your life is your trauma and your life, and let your husband's trauma be his trauma, but you to be able to find some peace within yourself to where everything that he does isn't so triggering to you. What you're describing is a trauma bond. And a trauma bond is when we're in a relationship with another trauma person who's constantly traumatizing us over and over and over again. And we're not getting any resilience, no regulation in our systems to where we can realize we don't have to buy everything they're selling. That we can say, your words and your life is your words and your life, and my words and my life are mine. So I encourage you, if you can't afford therapy, to find someone who you can sit on a bench with and just sit there. No conversation. Learn to be quiet with another human being. And I don't know if it'll fix it or help it or whatever, but it's going to start to give you a bit of resilience. To where it doesn't matter what trauma you were raised in or your complex trauma. What matters is you're being traumatized every day of your life right now. That's the part that I heard.
Right.
That's the part that we don't need to worry about back then. We need to right now begin to give you some resilience. Right now to be able to hear you without trying to fix you with, you know, finding that person. Maybe you have a sibling, a sister you could sit with who's not going to judge you. Because a lot of people are going to try to fix your relationship or fix you. And you don't need any of that stuff. You just need someone to be with you right now who's not traumatizing you.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for your vulnerability tonight.
Wow. Okay. Let's go to the closing part of the segment, Steve. Tonight's been a very deep night. So first of all, thank you to Steve and Terrell for coming on tonight and giving tremendous amount of encouragement, really eye-opening event. And I hope people feel just his presence. Honestly, I feel like just tonight is already like the transformative touch without touching the back of my head. I'll just massage my head myself right now. I'll take a walk with Menachem. But, Steve, we gotta come back again. We gotta do a round two, but, really appreciate it. Again, if anybody's here, first time every Sunday night at 9 o'clock on the Zoom ID, we have different Rabbanim, different topics, different therapists. Next week, May 18th, we're gonna have the world famous Dr. Jacob Friedman from Israel. We'll be here. We'll discuss the topic. We didn't confirm it yet with him. It should be powerful and amazing. Please join us. Everything is recorded on MenachemBerville.com. If anybody has any questions, please email coachmenachem@gmail.com. Tonight's share is 230. If you want to listen to it on the phone lines, it'll be up on the phones at 732-305-9011. Again, it's 230. And the phone number is 732-305-9011. Thank you for all the advertising sponsors, like Scoop, LA Narrow, Fox Fun Central, and Chayal Kaufman from JCN. We'll go to the closing part. Menachem, I'll go first. Menachem, followed by Steve, will end it. But I just want to say for all the people that are listening, is obviously we have to sometimes go into ourselves and see if there's something in us that is not sitting right, something that we're trying so hard to control to make sure certain things work a certain way without just, I don't want to use the word letting go, but just like letting things take its own course, whether it's A or B, either way, you'll be fine. We try so hard sometimes, so much force to make sure that the outcome is a certain way, because if it's the other way, it's going to really affect us. So we'll do everything to make sure that it goes that way. And we'll work with unbelievable energy and force. I think a lot of people are super successful. They'll probably build big companies because of that trauma force, you know, that's behind them, that's forcing them to, I gotta make a lot of money. I have to have a big company. I have to this. I have to that. And that fear or that trauma in them really, it could be used as a powerful weapon to do things, but it might not be coming from the healthiest place. So if we could really tap into that and see if our intentions are sincere for the overall good. And also, no matter what the outcome is, no matter what you're doing, going for a job interview, whether you get it, whether you don't get it, whether you get the raise, you don't get the raise, whether your child goes this way, your child goes that way, whether you do get accepted to school, you don't get school, don't get accepted to school, okay with everything. Like, you know, we say it in the Jewish way of accepting God's, you know, decision and believing in him in emunah and betochen. But let's do that also for ourselves. Not use it as a spiritual bypass and say, oh, if he didn't get into school, it's because God didn't want. But really inside, you're not okay with it. Being internally okay with God's decision and being calm with yourself and really healing from those triggers. And if you can do it logically, which I love logic, then it's probably something much deeper than logic. Something more deep inside. And if it's so deep inside and you can't work it out with logic, then again, I'm not promoting anything and I don't know what works, what doesn't work. But there are deeper forms of somatic, TEB, CYT, AQI, whatever it is that you find that will help you in the core, meditation, deep feelings, you know, try to tap into that to really get to that core. So I just think this is a very big topic. I think that people will understand it. I feel like some people like, they could listen to this whole program for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and be like, I have no idea what they spoke about. It makes no logical sense. Complete insanity. So if that's what you feel like after this program, you're definitely traumatized. Coach Menachem.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much. Steve, I want to thank you for being with us tonight, for holding the space, for allowing us to explore with safety. Like we heard tonight, you know, it's not the words, it's not the logic, it's the deep feeling that we have in our body that we can, that we're, it's okay. That you can let go. Now, not letting go with, you know, it's really finding inside of you that safety, being able to regulate and to learn that you're not sure. Might be some fear of the unknown. Okay. And like we heard, don't try to do it all by yourself. You've been with yourself for too long already. And that's something new to me. And I was trying, you know, I'm trying to, you know, say that there's a balance. Because obviously you can't, there are going to be times that you're going to be yourself. And the question is, what do you do on yourself? How do you talk to yourself? How do you support yourself? But it starts, you have to find somebody that can be there with you and not try to fix you. Just to listen, and it is. It just is, and that's how you feel. Okay. Because the second they try to fix you, and if you want to fix yourself, and you're thinking, oh, when am I going to be fixed already? Then you're not creating that space to just be. Might not be perfect, but I'm still here. I'm, you know, it's okay. So, you know, Hashem should help. We should, you know, help all of us, everybody in the area that we need it, that we should be able to get the help we need, get to a place where we can be okay with our relationships, relationship with Hashem, and not constantly thinking, am I doing it wrong? Is something wrong with me? And the negativity running daily, being able to find some positive, being able to be in a place where you can sit with yourself. And I want to thank you to start this conversation. So thank you very much. And hopefully one day we'll continue.
I look forward to it. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you for this couple of hours of being with you all. And I do talk slow, but my heart is just full right now. Thank you.
Wow.
Okay, everybody, thank you very much. Thank you again, Steve, for coming on. We'll see you all next week, 9 p.m. with Dr. Jacob Friedman. Everybody have a wonderful week. Good night.
Thank you.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.